Podcasting from behind her locked bathroom door, the only quiet place in the house, this is the Homeschool Sanity Show, a twice-monthly podcast with expert advice for happier, healthier homeschool living. And now, here's your host, Christian psychologist and homeschool mom of six, Dr. Melanie Wilson.
Hello, and welcome to today's topic, Discover and Develop Your Child's Talent. My guest today is Jonathan Harris. He is a homeschooling father of eight and the owner of 10ktotalent.com. And I'm really looking forward to talking with him about how we can not only develop our child's talent, but how we can even integrate that into our homeschooling. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining me today. And I hope you will take a few minutes to tell us a little bit more about you and your family.
Oh, absolutely. Hi, Melanie. Thanks for having me on board. Yes, I live in Northern California, and I'm a dad. I have eight children at home. My oldest is currently 16 years old and just started driving his car, and my youngest is 4 years old, and she's the mascot of the older kids. So we're out here in Northern California, actually pretty far away from any of the big cities. We're close to one of the last cities in California before you start heading out and into the state of Oregon. So we're at the tippy top, at the top of the valley in California where it's pretty hot. And this is where we live and work, because we also, not only do we homeschool, we also work from home. My wife and I run another business, not at all related to homeschooling, and it's a specialty lotion for a special kind of skin issue that my wife used to have. And so we get to work from home and use the internet to ship out our product.
Well, that is great, and I have a lot of respect for a father of eight and anyone who has a new driver, because that's a scary thing. We need to do a show on that sometime. Well, today we are going to talk about talent education, and it's something that we hear a lot about. It's something that, as homeschooling parents, we're concerned with. We want to do our absolute best to help our children discover and develop their talent. But I am interested in how you became interested in that topic.
Yeah, well, when this sort of journey started for us, I don't know, maybe about 4 years ago, really, where it started crystallizing into the word talent and education together, is we were doing great with our homeschooling, and we'd probably be described as a kind of eclectic type of homeschooling family, where we pick and choose the pieces that we like according to the personalities and the needs of our children, and probably more of a Charlotte Mason approach at the younger ages, and then a lot more eclectic as the kids got older. And that was great, because there's a lot of great materials to choose from, but there were two things that were kind of coming up on the horizon for us that we were seeing. One is some of the personal examples of acquaintances in the homeschooling movement that had older kids than us and that were now graduating. And then also at the same time, flashbacks maybe to my own time when I finished high school and then started hitting the workforce and going to college and supporting myself while in college. And I remember that there were a lot of experiences that I did not want my sons to have to repeat. I say sons because I mostly have boys at home, so those were the ones at the foremost thought in my mind. It's like I didn't want them to have to repeat some of the same difficulties they had when I finished high school. That was one part of it. And at the same time, I was also noticing that some of the 18, 19, 21-year-olds that were graduating weren't doing that great, not so much from a moral perspective, because they were, a lot of them were very well taught, good values and good work ethic, but they were floundering with really low-skilled jobs, low opportunities, and they didn't seem to have anything of real market value that was going to help them, you know, forge ahead quickly in their younger years. And so that was concerning me, and I wanted to go back to the drawing board and take a look at exactly what we were doing. And so I first started working backwards on the things I really didn't want them to find themselves in when they became 19 or 20. And I start to say, okay, I don't like this part, and I didn't like that experience, and I'm seeing this problem happening with these other kids right now. I'm going to start introducing things in their education and experiences that's going to avoid that problem. So what I mean by that is, like, I would see some kids struggling as a bag boy at a grocery store, barely making payments for their car and having no time to do anything else. So I decided, well, I'm going to start maybe teaching some skills that are much more business oriented, so they don't have to take the first low paying job that they find. So that was one of those. And then the other one, I also realized that if I was going to avoid that problem, I'd have to start giving them something that had a little bit more value to others, something that they were good enough at that people would want to either give them opportunities to take off with it or pay them, much better than minimum wage. So that's what started this whole idea of looking for a skill set that made sense for them when they entered into their adult lives. And so from there, I started reading up on literature for adults on the concept of developing talent, which basically is an amazing level of service or amazing level of ability to create something for other people. And that's what started that whole journey. And then applying those principles in the context of children, which there wasn't very much literature on that. So I thought, well, I'm gonna experiment with that and start systematically reading up on the literature and then translating that into a homeschooling environment with children. And so that's how that all started.
And I'm sure it had a dramatic effect on how you saw your homeschooling as well.
Oh, completely. It completely changed the way we looked at things, because at that point, it gave us a framework from which to choose from so many different and wonderful things. So, for example, when you're reading history, after a while, I think I told my wife jokingly, it's like, how much history do we need? The kids already know more history than my wife and I ever did at their age, and even in college at some point. And so we're saying, well, I mean, are we just gonna keep reading? I also ran into the issue where our children are very good readers, eager readers, and then we had read most of the good literature. I shouldn't say, I know there's a lot out there, but we read a lot of really good literature, and with the advent of audiobooks, now they were even able to access literature that was more difficult and intended for older children. But once we reached that, then the next level up from there, we were starting to get into more the type of literature that really only adults should be reading, if at all. Kind of some of the very dark, some of the very heavy topics. And I'm like, well, I don't want my 12-year-old already wrestling with some of this stuff that I'm not even really convinced they should. I mean, they don't need to. Some things you need to read to figure out how other people are thinking. But we already bumped up against that. So I'm thinking, well, are we just going to just, because now we run out of, we have so much time on our hands. We didn't have time during the day, but I'm saying we had already bumped up against things that we thought were important. And so now it seemed like we were just scouring the earth to just try to cram more history, more math, more of everything without any particular purpose and direction. And so that's when I started thinking, well, we need to have a plan as to why we're doing more European history versus American history versus Asian history. You can go on and on. And once we started coming up with an idea of what happens if we developed a talent, something around which they could get all excited about, then it becomes a little more clear as to what pieces we would want to develop in all our subject matter.
Well, this is very interesting to me because as a psychologist, I think I'm probably more interested in motivation than the average person. And, I mean, you're really tapping into that. You're trying to find something that is going to just propel your child into developing because they're just so passionate about it. Well, let's kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about recognizing talents in your children. What are some signs that your child has a talent for something?
Well, what I would say, you're not so much looking for a signs for a talent. What you are looking for are signs to opportunities, some things in your family environment, in your child's life that you could use to gradually develop into a talent. So in this idea, what you're doing is that you're starting off with the premise that a talent is not something full blown or just barely at the surface, and all you have to do is, you know, poke the child and it's gonna come gushing out. So you see your child playing a little bit of piano and you're thinking, wow, if we could just put him in that one summer camp, it's just gonna come out that he's a genius at this, whether it be math, music, or any other kind of activity. The approach I'm taking here is rather that there are some things in your child's life, there are some things in your family life, there are some things in the environment that you live in, some opportunities, relationships that you have with particular individuals that you could decide to put together in some kind of meaningful, coordinated whole to turn that into a talent. And mm-hmm. and the reason why that's important is because if you don't do that, you're going to wind, a lot of times parents will wind up in the situation where it's like, wow, my child really likes playing video games. Maybe that's their talent, you know? Or and so they feel, and then they feel, I mean, honestly, I've seen this, they feel like cursed. I was like, good, looks like my kid's gift is video games. And so, and it's kind of a little bit absurd, but I can understand because what they're looking for, partly you're saying that, is motivation. Parents have extremes on their hands. So have, in some families, you'll have kids that are just like couch potatoes. They seem to have no motivation. You got to prod them on everything. If it's not an obligation, they're not going to do it. And so you have that extreme. And then you have some other families, it's like they're on constant caffeine overdrive, and they're going from one activity to the next. You see them in a few months, they've already moved on from hockey, and now they're into basketball. And then next month it's going to be, you know, broom hockey or something. So they just seem to be going from one event to the next. They're exhausted. And in that case, a lot of times, they're not complaining that their kid doesn't have a talent. They're just saying he's got no focus and no direction. So really what I'm talking about is if you just pick things in your environment in an intelligent way and combine them with the idea of practicing at it and developing, that you can turn any number of things into a talent. So instead of looking for that talent, you're looking for advantages that you have in your life that you could turn into a talent that makes sense, long term. So, you know, in that earlier example of, you know, a talent for playing video game, actually, ironically, you probably could turn that eventually into a talent, but if you were to just let it be as it is, then you see parents getting desperate. Oh my goodness, my child's talent is soccer, and there's no future in it, you know. Or my child's talent is putting horseshoes on horses, and they're like, where do you go with that in the future? Well, the answer is you don't go very far with that in the future, and it's not really a talent in the sense that it's valuable to other people. Those are actually hobbies. So they may have a place and a purpose in a person's life for personal enjoyment, but you shouldn't develop them to the point where you're expecting that you're going to get some return on it for enjoyment in your adult life. But you can turn a lot of those hobbies, even, you know, the video game interest, into a talent if you start combining other skills and picking and choosing things. So not all is lost if you already have a child that's very deep into some kind of activity that you feel is almost frivolous or doesn't have a future to it. You could probably even then rescue it if you approach it from the concept that he's not born to do video games. He's up until now, he's spent a lot of time playing video games, and he's had opportunities because his parents are letting him do it, and they have the equipment and everything. So it also allows you to realize that, well, you can change the direction of that and combine other things and restrict him in some areas and encourage him in a different direction.
I really like the way you're describing talent because it's much more of a biblical definition of talent than a worldly definition. I think most of us, including myself, quite honestly, when I speak about homeschooling gifted and talented children, I think I have in my mind, and most people do too, you know, somebody who is just extremely gifted at an instrument or, you know, maybe at a sport or something, and we're almost always thinking about what could they do with that for themselves. You know, how famous could they be? How much money could they make? Versus how could they use this talent that has been given by God to serve others and to fulfill the purposes that he has for them. I really appreciate the way that you are kind of turning that definition upside down.
Yeah, you know, and
well,
it's interesting
yeah.
when you look at that, the parable of the talents, which is where I think we get mm-hmm. That modern English expression. I'm not sure that same expression is the same in the other languages, but it's translated that way for us. But, you know, in the original parable, the master gives everybody, you know, talents of silver. So he gives them a gift, something to get started with. But in the bigger picture of it, when he comes back to see what they've done with it, even the original gift, when you see in the story, in the parable, plays a small role. It's only a small aspect. There's a lot more that goes into that to be able to multiply it. And so that's what I want to encourage parents to think of. It's like, oh my goodness, you know, I would love to see. It looks like we have an opportunity to develop this talent or this skill, but my child is not automatically, you know, producing this amazing feat where everybody's, you know, passing out in awe. And rather, even when you look at the parable of the talents in the Bible with the spiritual application, it's taking the point of view that whatever that is, it's still small. And you're expected to mm-hmm. multiply 10, 100 times or even more. So whatever that is, in proportion, if you continue the analogy, it's very small. So you don't have to look for this monstrous talent that your child comes out of the womb with full-blown. It's often mm-hmm. very small. There may be some abilities there, and people can discuss, you know, the chicken or the egg. You know, is it, were they born with it a little bit, or did the parents encourage it? I honestly think some of it's a combination of things, but regardless, it mm-hmm. plays it's a seed basically. And after that, you're expected to work really, really hard, take risk, and to explore. And that's the implication of the parable of the talents, is that you're expected to take risk and get out there. And that's what the fellow gets himself into trouble. He takes the position, well, I don't want to take any risk. I don't want to mess up the quote talent you gave me, so I'm not going to mm-hmm. multiply it. So if the old school of thinking of the talents, you're thinking, well, he's safe, he's got his talent. No, he has to multiply it, and by a factor not of two times or three times, but 10 and 100-fold. So whatever talent your child may or may not be, you know, may be born with, it's still going to involve a lot of work and a lot mm-hmm. of coordination and some risk-taking.
All right. Well, I know that people listening are probably just sitting on some questions that they still have about how do I identify what my child's talents are, and I know that you have a resource that can really help people in that process that we are going to discuss later. But for now, let's assume that we already recognize that seed of talent in our child. What are some mistakes that you see parents often making in developing that talent?
Well, one of the things is that when you see the beginning, a seed of a talent in your child's life, and a lot of times, you know, by then your child's maybe 12 or 14, so you're a little more confident. They've been spending some time at something, showing some evidence. Maybe you're getting feedback from other people. Is that from the perspective of making it relevant long term for their life, so that it doesn't die off as soon as they graduate from high school. What you want to do is you want to immediately start thinking in terms of value for others. And depending on what it is, you know, in some cases it might be a type of service for others. In other situations, it may be building or creating something for others. So it's not a service but a product, a thing that they're going to be able to give to someone else. And you want to think right away in terms of how can they start giving value to other people through their talent. And the reason for that is because you don't want to paint your child into a corner where they're developing some kind of ability that takes a lot of work, but it's completely irrelevant to society around them. And a lot of times they get confused by naming a talent with a career label. So mm-hmm. for example, one example would be kind of obvious because that's so clear. But let's say you see your child saying, oh, he has a medical interest. You know, he's playing around, he's dissecting animals, he's he's sewing them up. You live on a farm, and, you know, it's very exciting. He's got a veterinarian uncle. And you decide, oh, okay, what I want him to be is an eye surgeon. So you say his talent is eye surgeon. Well, right there you have a problem because you're locking him in. You're going to start making decisions based on the fact that, quote, he's going to be an eye surgeon. Well, what happens if he graduates 10 years from now and the eye surgeon market is overflooded with eye surgeons, and it turns out that the opportunities are much better for becoming a foot surgeon and so forth. Now, I'm just using a very simple analogy because we know that the medical field changes so much. So what you would, it's better to say that he has, you know, a medical talent, and you're allowing yourself to be flexible to go in different directions. When you start saying he has a medical talent, yes, he might still eventually become an eye surgeon, but you're keeping yourself open to the fact that maybe he's going to go into research or to medical technology, any number of paths. And but when you come to more traditional sounding talents, that's when sometimes people get locked in. So, you know, it's not uncommon for me to bump into a peer of my age who will say, "Oh, when I was younger, I spent 6 years studying professional violin," and I'll be completely stunned because I'm like, "Well, I've never heard you play the violin." It's like, "No, once I finished school, I never played it again," and I'm like completely bowled over. So you spent 6-7 years going to a very expensive place. And you never say, "Yeah, because in the churches, you know, the churches I attend to, they're not really into violin. They maybe play it only once a year, and the style that I play is not, you know, people aren't really interested in hearing that around me, and people don't want to hear it at birthday parties, and on and on it goes." And I'm like, "Well, what was going on in the parent's mind? What was going on in the child's mind to spend that much money and time in developing a talent they had no intention of continuing later?" Now, honestly, in those situations, I don't think that they didn't have the intention of not continuing it, but they never asked those questions.
Right.
So it doesn't mean a person can't pursue violin. It doesn't mean they can't pursue music. It just means you need to know a little bit early on and start testing the market to see in which context people want violin now. So. You know, it's very popular with the teens. My kids like that too. There's this famous YouTube a young lady who does violin, and she does dancing, and she does it in parks in famous places in the United States with little storylines. And I think her name is Lindsay Sterling. It's extremely popular, huge following. Well, that's an example of someone who figured out that people don't really want to go to concert halls most time to listen to you play in a piano, play a violin. But it turns out, unknown to me, because I'm not as crazy about it, that there's a huge demand for people seeing you play violin in outdoors, filmed on YouTube in famous parks in the United States. There's a huge demand. They're very short. I think they last about 3 to 4 minutes, and they have their own storyline. And this person has a huge following. So that's an example of your adapting a traditional talent to the marketplace, to the needs that people have. People do need enjoyment, but a lot of times they're busy and they would rather watch it at home on the screen or download it on their iPod and enjoy it in their life. But they don't want to go to concert halls anymore. So that's
that
what I'm encouraging
really
parents to do. Yeah.
Yes, that is really, really good. And for those listening, I will put a link up to Lindsay Sterling, or at least one of her videos on YouTube, so you can see what Jonathan is talking about.
Yeah, they're fun. They're very popular with teenagers. They're, you know, from my position as a dad, they're a little sugary, a little overly sugary sweet, but you know, there's a place for sugar in your life, and kids enjoy it. I mean, it's beautiful. You know, it's in a beautiful setting, and people, I guess, you know, children imagine themselves playing music outdoors like that, and it fulfills a musical need in people's lives. But the point there is that simply people still want music. They just may not want it in the old traditional format, and your child, you don't want to paint your child into a corner where no one wants to even hear them play because, you know, they're not playing the right kind of music, or they're not playing it in the right environment that people want now, that kind of thing.
Okay. That's very good. Very good advice. Well, once we have determined a good direction, or at least what our child's potential talent should be after doing a lot of praying and discussing and maybe some research on top of it. What are some first steps that we should take to really help develop that talent?
Yeah, what you want to do is you want to use, the old-fashioned thing about you have a big goal in life, right? And they say once you've come up with your big goals, then what you need to do is pare it down to something you can do immediately. So, you know, that's the proverbial one when someone says, I want world peace. Well, that's a tall order, and that's, that's a big thing. So what people want to know is, okay, world peace, that's great, but what can you do now in your neighborhood and your town to promote peace? And then, of course, the next question there is, well, who are you going to promote peace with? So you have to find a conflict. You have to find real people, and you probably have to specialize in a particular area. So you'd write up a little mission statement. At that point, that's when you start getting your sea legs, you start practicing at that, you get known, you adjust, you realize that maybe you're a little bit better in one area but not the other. Well, that's the same thing that you would do also with your talent. If you have some lofty goal, which you might someday obtain, you need to translate it into something you can get started on today. So like in my guide, I often talk about that. You know, sometimes you have a goal of maybe going around the world as a family in a sailboat. You know, there's a subculture in the homeschooling movement that loves to do that kind of stuff. But what you would want to do before you go to that level and buy an expensive boat and go is you would want to probably practice on a lake, in the summer and take some lessons. So you would start writing up a goal that would talk about where you're going to go to start learning how to sail, in a lake, in a specific location on a particular type of boat. So same thing with your talent. You want to translate the big idea into something doable and appropriate for your child's age. So that's going to vary. You know, a 12-year-old won't have as much freedom and ability to do things as, let's say, a 17-year-old would. So you're going to have to intelligently think through that and see how you can get them started. So that's a big thing, is that sometimes the goals are so lofty, they're paralyzed, they can't get started. They have a concept of something, amazing, but it seems so distant. And you have to work through with starting something small and something specific. And it's the acting on it that's going to start showing you a little more clearly where you need to emphasize one area over another, because a lot of times you just don't know. Maybe there's going to be resistance from people in exercising your skill in a particular way that you hadn't thought of, and by attempting to do that, you'll quickly find out. Or there'll be great acceptance, in which case you can pour more time and resources in going down that direction.
And I would think also just keep tabs on what's happening in our economy and in our culture too.
Right. And and that's one of the things, is that this is you have to be a buyer beware, because there are a lot of great educational resources out there, but they have a particular purpose. A lot of times they're there to teach, older skills that have been around and still need to be around, but they're not necessarily going to explain to you how you're going to adapt it into your environment. So right now there's a huge demand, and we use those services. We buy them from professional artists for art, but we want it. We buy art that's in a digital format. We don't buy oil paintings. I don't even know anyone in my circles has ever bought an oil painting. And but a lot of kids are still going to school for traditional oil painting. So it doesn't mean you can't use those skills, but you're going to have to quickly find out how to translate it into a digital medium, at least according as it is now. So you have to be testing for that and getting your child as soon as possible to see if they learn how to apply it in their environment today. So one example is there's a lot of fandom stuff out there on the Internet where, fans of a particular show or of a particular hobby congregate online, and they love new interpretations, new sketches, new illustrations, new artsy things about their hobby or their interest. And that's a great way for a young person to get started and practice their art, for example, if it's a illustrative type of art, to start putting it out there and seeing what kind of feedback they get from people. rather than just going, you know,
that's
to their
a
traditional oil class and only painting for the teacher.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. I'm interested in knowing how you can then, and I think I have an idea of what you're going to say, but how can we then, after we are encouraging our child to set some reasonably attainable goals, how can we incorporate that into our homeschooling then? So as you were talking about when we first started, so that we're not spending the preponderance of our time maybe developing things that aren't as going to be as key to them developing that talent.
Right. Well, every year I live in California, and we have never had our kids in the public school system in California. But if, in the back of my mind, I'm pretty certain that one of the requirements in the public school is to, at a particular grade level, is to study the old Spanish missions, the history of the old Spanish missions inside of California. And it's always done at a particular time of the year at a particular grade level. And one of the reasons I know that is because if I go to the library in that time frame, all the books on that subject are checked out. And it's every year at the same time for the same grade. And and obviously for the school system, it's an obvious choice. You know, it's about California, which I understand, and it also makes it easy for them to measure everybody on the same thing. You know, you can all look at the same little dioramas and the same little essays that they've heard 1,000 times. So it's easy to grade and to say, okay, now you know California history. If you're a talent-focused child and you are going to be studying California history, at this point in time, what you're going to do, instead of just jumping on to the study of missions, what you want to do is take a look at what your talent focus is. So let's say you have a more of a musically oriented talent. You may want, instead of studying the missions of the time, maybe what you would rather do, what you should do, is study instead the music of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that as you're going through your California history, as you're going through your American history, you're always trying to see and study it from the perspective of your talent. And so as you're doing that, your son or your daughter is going to become really excited about history and about their talent, because it's going to reinforce each other. So at every time they cycle through history, every time they move a little bit deeper in their understanding about their music, it's going to be self-reinforcing. So they will never forget usually their history at that point, because it's so tied into what they're passionate about. And at the same time, when they go into the next and a new time period that they have never studied, or an era that they have never fully understood, they already know what happened previously in the era regarding music. You know, obviously it's going to be tied to the philosophy, it's going to be tied to the lyrics, to the mindset, and they're going to understand history at an interesting and unique way from everybody else is going to, that's going to be studying it. So you get this this virtuous cycle going on, where when they say, hey, let's study California history in that example, they're excited. This is great. I'm going to get to practice my instrument. I'm going to maybe try to write some lyrics. I'm going to try to compose. I'm going to practice my Spanish by singing the song.
Mm-hmm.
So you get, so all of a sudden it becomes a little more clear as to how you're going to approach various subjects. Right off the bat, you get that advantage of being able to peg your memory, you know, as they call that, pegging your memory onto something. So something you already know very well, you learn something new, and it gets pegged to that. So now, instead of California history being a disjointed list of facts, it's all tied into your talent, and you're also understanding your talent at a deeper level.
That just makes so much sense, and I think it is probably inspiring people to think about how they could change the emphasis of their homeschool studies for their child's talent as well. Jonathan, the last thing that I want to talk about, but it's not the least, is the resources that you have available for parents who want to help grow their child's talent. I have begun reading one of your resources, and that is an ebook that you have, and I absolutely love it. I can't wait to get off the phone with you and start diving into it and doing the exercises for my own children. But can you tell us more about that ebook and more about what's available on your website?
Sure. If you go to my website, you can just browse the website, and I have weekly articles that I put out, tips and ideas and reviews of how to build talent in your child's life. So a lot of that information is in the post. And what I also have is two guides, and the one guide that you're referring to is called How to Discover and Develop Your Child's First 100 Hours of Talent. And so the purpose of that guide is to get people jump-started on something specific that you can then take from there and then continue over several years develop into a long-term talent. I think, honestly, that conceptually the most difficult part is coming up with a strategy for developing talent. And so that's what that guide is about. It's not the most difficult thing to do in terms of actual work effort, because that comes later on, where when the child is working on their talent, it does take a lot of energy. It's exciting energy, but it still takes a lot of energy. It's the conceptual part that the parents get stuck on. So what I did is put together a guide, and it walks the parents, not the child, it walks the parent through by showing them the assets that they have in their family and in their environment that they could use as a talent. And then at the end of the guide, I show how they can pick and choose in a judicious way so that they can get started, almost the next day, testing the waters and developing something that can turn into a long-term talent for adulthood.
Mm, wonderful. And you mentioned you have another resource as well.
Right. The other resource is not about discovering a talent, but it's actually about how to showcase your talent on a blog. So another component, and this is part of the overall concept of relevance, you know, we were talking earlier about making sure when your child gets into, reaches adulthood and leaves your home, that they have something of value to give to others. And one of the ways to do that is to make sure you can communicate clearly in your field of talent. So every field of talent has a way talking the talk, and it takes time for someone to develop your voice to be taken seriously with other expert peers in that environment. And so by blogging, I have found that that's one of the easiest ways for a person who's still in the home to start developing their voice in that field. And I show you how to come up with a blog, how to focus on a particular topic, how to figure out how long your blog post should be, and it's not the same for everybody because it depends on the field of talent. And and I also encourage people to look way beyond just writing for showcasing the talent. And it may seem obvious, but a lot of people forget that if you have a talent that's primarily visual or, you know, scientific, your primary way of communicating is not going to be through long essays. It's going to be very different, and each field is going to have what they feel is appropriate way of communicating. And if you're going to be taken seriously, you kind of have to learn to copy them at a certain level, but at the same time also learn to develop to have your own unique voice within that larger protocol of communication. So I show kids, starting at 12 years of age, of how to start doing that. Some of it involves, you know, finding your blog heroes in that field and starting to copy a little bit what they do. And I give some tips on how to deal with internet safety and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's great. I know a lot of parents will be very interested in helping their child get started with that. I just want to emphasize what your blog name is again, your website, 10k2talent.com. 10 is a number, and the word 2 is spelled out. And I'm going to have a link to that in case it's just still not going through on homeschoolsanity.com. And if you will scroll down to discover and develop your child's talent, you can find all of the links that we've discussed today. Jonathan, it has been a pleasure. I would love to sit and talk with you longer about my children's talents and how I might incorporate those better into our homeschooling, but we're going to have to say goodbye. And
Thank
I hope
you.
That many of our listeners will take advantage of the resources that you have because they are wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time to share with us today.
Thank you, Melanie.
Thank you for joining us for the Homeschool Sanity Show with Dr. Melanie Wilson. Visit Melanie at psychowith6.com, that's the number 6, for more sanity-saving ideas. The Homeschool Sanity Show is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.